Hi, I'm Harriet Thomas, and this is There's a Walk for That. A few years ago, I went looking for adventure. What I actually found was the end of years of back pain, a body that finally fit my clothes again, and something I never expected, a personal wellness sanctuary right outside my door. I'm not a doctor or a fitness expert, just someone who discovered a daily habit that revitalized my health, my emotions, and even my sense of purpose. From easing stress to shrinking your waistline, there really is a walk for that. Join me as I explore the power of walking with inspiring guests and offer tips to help you make walking a fun, transformative part of your day. Today on There's a Walk for That, I'm talking to wellness practitioner Vanessa Potter. Vanessa was once a TV producer. But in 2012, her life took an unexpected turn when a sudden illness left her blind and paralyzed. During her recovery, she began exploring meditation and mind-body practices, not just as comfort, but as something to be tested, measured, and understood. That curiosity led to a decade of research with neuroscientists, a TEDx talk in Belgium, two books, Patient H69 and Finding My Right Mind, and even a science art exhibition where people could see and hear their own brainwaves during meditation. She's now the founder of Park Bathe, a science-backed form of forest bathing that uses mindful walking to slow down the mind and ease anxious thinking. Vanessa's story begins on her daughter's fifth birthday, a day that was meant to be about cake and party games, but became the moment that everything changed. Here's Vanessa to tell the story.
Everything starts somewhere. And I think actually another wellness practitioner said to me, oh, you don't come across a wellness practitioner without a backstory. So yes, this is my backstory, if you like. I was a television producer. I was not a nature nerd back in 2012. I had two very small children. They were both under five. And I just gone freelance and had taken the summer off and was spending time with my kids. And then, yeah, this thing happened, the traumatic curveball. And that was that I was suddenly struck down by an autoimmune neurological illness, a very, very rare one, which left me blind and paralyzed pretty much overnight. It actually took 3 days to lose my sight and mobility completely, which was extraordinarily frightening. And of course, not just sent me into a huge spiral, but my entire family. So that acute period lasted for 2 weeks in hospital, during which time my vision went to completely black and I could not feel. So I had something called sensory loss, which is kind of what it sounds like. I couldn't sense or feel my hands, arms, and my feet and my legs. So it's like an incredible numbness. And what my feet felt like to me were enormous blocks of ice. And my hands felt like somebody had wrapped them up in gaffer tape. So I couldn't use them because they did not, in my brain was saying, these aren't hands, these are just lumps of ice. Where have your feet gone? And so that essentially has the same effect as paralyzing you because you know, you become immobile. So this was very frightening. They didn't at one stage know if I would even survive. They had no idea what it was. There was lots of discussions around brain tumours and MS and lots of very scary things. And they settled on this autoimmune condition. And when I was sent home, when I look back, it's really quite bizarre. I was sent home with no resource or support. And I was legally blind and two small children. And that was really quite a crucial time. And it's kind of a bit make or break. And I think this is where, I mean, I started doing a diary from day one because I'm a TV producer. So we document our lives. That's what we do. And maybe not all of us, but I do. And so I started tracking because it was very frustrating, actually. People would come to the house and they'd be like, you know, how are you doing? I'm like, well, the mobility bit was easy to answer because after a while, the senses didn't exactly start to come back, but they were changing. So I'd say, oh, right, well, I've managed to stand today. well, I couldn't do that yesterday. So that's progress. And then 2 weeks later, it's like, well, I've managed to take, with a walking stick, I've managed to take, and a bit of help, 3 or 4 steps. Well, that's better than standing. So there was progression I could share. The visual side was a nightmare. So what it looked like to me was when my vision kind of hit black and then came back, it was like I'd landed on another planet. I couldn't see people, places. I didn't know the room I was in. I had no idea where I would be. I started to get like a black and white cloudy world with no shape or lines, nothing, no detail. So it was like a big blur. And slowly through that mist, there would start to be these jiggling lines. And it took me a long time to realise. Sometimes I'd be staring at something and I'd realise it was a door frame. So I had to literally piece the world back together. And what I was realising is that my vision was coming back in layers. And I was documenting all of this. But this is very frustrating and difficult to articulate to your friends and family. And I would quite often say things like, oh, I feel like there's a table, or I feel that that might be navy blue, or I feel that that's red. And of course, my family are looking at me going, what? But this made a lot of sense to me. So after about 6 months, when colour was slowly coming back, and colours did some very, very strange things. And actually, the first book has got hugely detailed kind of narration of all the crazy things, like colours did spitting and they changed and they would be effervescent, and I could control whether something was sparkling or flat. All sorts of colours levitated. It was extraordinary, that journey, and I couldn't possibly even do it justice. And in fact, actually, that whole book one is now, because it's quite scientific, the first book, it's actually on the reading list for many of the neuro-ophthalmology courses around the world, in fact.
Wow.
Because it gives such an incredible insight into the human visual system, which we don't normally get. We don't normally, as adults, get to have it turned off and then slowly turn back on. So you see the building blocks. It's like going backstage of your own vision. So that's why, after 9 months, when I sort of started going, right, what am I going to do with this? By then, I had so much data, so many anecdotal stories and moments that are all captured in such detail, I kind of created a neuroscience exhibition. And I went to Cambridge University. Well, actually, it didn't just go there. I had to stalk a neuroscientist for quite a few months, who eventually caved because I sounded interesting. And he booked a 10-minute call with me, which lasted 2 hours. And we're still working together now, actually. And so I went up to Cambridge and met these neuroscientists and vision scientists. And I was really interested in trying to tell this story, but tell it through science. And that kicked off a whole 10-year period of scientific collaborations and science art exhibitions, which were incredible to work on.
You're listening to There's a Walk for That on UK Health Radio with me, Harriet Thomas. And today I'm in conversation with researcher, author, TEDx speaker and wellness practitioner, Vanessa Potter. In this section, Vanessa shares how one of her greatest pleasures is helping people discover joy, wonder and deep relaxation, even in the grottiest urban park.
I'm loving your journey through the different kinds of meditation and you know, how you react to it and how, yeah, it's really fascinating. So I'm kind of can't wait to sort of see what happens.
A lot.
yeah,
a lot happens. You've got so many more characters to meet. This was the most interesting thing. I learned so much just about not just the modalities, but the spiritual networks and schools and people. I meet so many interesting people on this journey. And it was a really good, fun thing. It was supposed to be a year, and of course it was 3 years.
Well, that was one of the things, as I'm reading it, that's one of the things I'm really interested in. I'm like, this is a long project. So I think somewhere it said 18 months. And I was like, wow, that's, you know, that's a big commitment, but an amazing commitment, given that it's all around meditation. And, you know, I guess it's a lifelong thing, really.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, you accrue the hours because you're doing a project like this, because meditation is measured in hours. Halfway through, well, not even halfway, about a third of the way through, I realised just to capture the right amount of data and to get through the modalities, because you can't just start one. You've got to meet the people and network and, you know, and sort of explain the project, and then the scientists have got to meet them. So it was all very complex. So, yeah, it was 3 years in the end. And then in the last chapter, if you've read the table of contents, you will know is psychedelics. And so that's not just something you do in 5 minutes. That had to be properly set up and done legally and abroad.
I mean, I came across you when I was looking for local walking groups.
Yes.
I've recently moved back to London, and although I walk every day, I kind of was losing my inspiration a bit, because I used to walk in the South Downs, etc. So I was looking for walking groups, and I discovered Park Bathe, which is an organisation you founded, and I went on a Park Bathe, and it was really lovely. You know, we went to not an amazing park, just a very regular urban park, nothing special about it whatsoever, main road on one side, and yet we used that as an opportunity to explore nature, to talk amongst ourselves, you know, to reduce stress. And that's what I loved about it, was that this idea that to get the benefits of park bathe or of just connecting with nature, you don't have to go miles and miles and miles. You can really do it in the most unpromising looking park, because nature is all around us in the city, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, that is the beating heart of park bathe. Obviously, the name comes from forest bathing in parks. And in fact, it was seeing park run people running around Crystal Palace Park where I just went, oh, my goodness, this is what we're doing. We're park bathing. So that's where it came from. And it's exactly that. And in fact, having done hundreds of these walks and, you know, into the thousands of people now, I have a sort of a secret pleasure, actually, of going to the grottiest, most uninspiring, grey, dull recreation ground. They're really good, because people look at them and go, dog poo, kids on bikes, really not pretty, nothing to inspire me. And I remember one in particular, actually out of London, I went up to run this. And there were sort of trees around the outside and, large expanses of grass. And we did a park bathe there with quite a large group, actually. And, oh, my goodness, it was probably one. I mean, they're all profound in their own ways. They're all very, very different. I'm sure you're going to ask me about that later. I mean, they really vary. But this was really interesting, because it blew their minds that they could feel like that after an hour in a place like that. And it's that we are under-awed by nature most of the time. We are uninspired, and you know, we're looking for the big hit, we're looking for the sombrero happiness and this, and you know, something extraordinary, whereas actually what I think we realize the most on a park bathe is that it's the subtle and the sublime and the gentle, and that what might be uninspiring initially becomes the absolute rapture and this joyful moment of spotting a berry that you had totally missed. And look how shiny this, and red. Have you ever seen a red like this? No, I've never. I mean, I've had that conversation about a red berry. I can't tell you how many times, because it happens. And then when you have that in an uninspiring place, it's 10 times more powerful because you didn't expect it.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to There's a Walk for That. I'm Harriet Thomas, and I'm talking to researcher, author, and founder of Park Bathe, Vanessa Potter. Coming up next, the holy grail of mindful walking, the elusive red berry. It's out there somewhere. But how do you actually spot it?
That's so funny what you say about the red berries, because I was in my local park and I was walking around. That's exactly what I saw. It's like, what? Look at those rose hips. It was, you know, brilliant sunny day, and everything was sort of frosty, and they were just glowing, and the colour was incredible. And I think what I like about what you've said is the idea, this idea that you don't have to, I love the idea of being under awed, and that you can switch that around by bringing awe and wonder into the way you look at everything, so that the most, you know, whether it's frost sparkling on a pavement or the sudden flutter of a bird or the colour of a leaf, these tiny, tiny, tiny things can really bring us that joy and wonder, and we can have it every day.
Yeah, but you know what? It's not accessible. It's not there. And most people walk around not doing that, for the simple reason there is a switch inside the brain. And I think that's probably the most important thing that we do on these sessions. We turn that switch on. So you get taught techniques on how, well, you don't just go off and notice these things. There's a whole process. So our project was based around a research study. You know, this was a pilot study to actually create a forest bathing model that is adapted and accessible for urban parks. And whilst it looks exceedingly simple and is adapted for every single park it goes in, it's the same thing. And if you go from one park to another park to do a park bathe walk, it's always the same model. And the reason for that is you have to go through a certain process, a sensory process and a slowing down process to suddenly see the red berry. Because that red berry didn't just appear. It's not like they grew overnight, but there is something that changes in you. And people talk a lot about the switch. Once it's switched on, this is the really good thing, it doesn't switch off and it stays on. And so you then walk through the rest of your life almost seeing the red berries. And there's some things that come with that. And maybe this is going to sound surprising. Sadness, regret comes with that. We see that a lot, particularly when people have lived in nearby a park. Like I'm thinking of Crystal Palace Park, actually. I've had it multiple times there. Someone who's lived there for 15, 20 years, and they come on a park bathe and they are blown away. And they say, I've seen more in this park than I've seen in the whole time I've ever been. I'm just astounded, and it's astounded at what they've missed. And for some people that feels momentarily a bit devastating, because you go, why have I never done this before? And so sometimes there has to be a bit of sadness around that. And okay, then there's a resolve that, right, now this switch is on, I'm just gonna spot everything, every spider's web, every berry, every little glistening leaf. This morning I spotted kind of icy, snowy leaves, and it looked like icing sugar. And that delighted me for a fraction of a moment walking the dog. But once that switch is on, those things become available to you, whereas they weren't in the past. So it's not happenstance. It doesn't just happen. You've got to make it happen. And I think there's a door that you walk through. And I think that's what we provide on these sessions.
You're back with me, Harriet Thomas, on There's a Walk for That, here on UK Health Radio. This is a show where I talk with expert guests about how our minds and bodies can benefit from the simple act of putting one foot in front of the other. Today's guest is researcher, author, TEDx speaker and wellness practitioner Vanessa Potter, who founded Park Bathe to bring the benefits of forest bathing into local urban parks. As we move into 2026, many of us are looking for ways to slow down and find a calmer, more peaceful way of being. If that sounds like you, then this next conversation may offer a few pointers.
There's something you said really interestingly about, you know, someone going to Crystal Palace Park and then suddenly realising the abundance and richness that's there and, you know, why didn't I see this before? And I'd like to use that as a switch, really, to talk about the world that we live in. Mm. For me, as someone who walks every day, the more I walk, the more I realise how walking is countercultural, because everything in our world, in the modern world, is very much to do with speed and upgrades and improvement and progress and faster, faster, faster. And, you know, we have all these inputs from social media and we've got AI and it's all crazy. And, you know, no wonder everyone is so anxious. And what seems to me to be the antidote is what you're talking about, is not in getting faster or getting some new gadget or gizmo, but in going slower and going back to something that is very elemental, which is nature and our own nature as animals that evolved breathing, walking at a slower pace. And I know in your park bathes, you integrate that, those elements of breathing, slowing down quite consciously. Yeah. And I'd love to know, firstly, how that all intersects, that kind of ideas of meditation, ideas of breathing, ideas of walking in nature, how that all intersects to create this awakening, if you like. And what is it about our culture, or what do we need to do to bring that awakening to more people?
Okay, so there's quite a lot of answers in that question.
That was probably about 10 questions in one.
Yeah, it was at least 5, I think. Okay, I'm going to start with your first one with speed. Speed is our kind of nemesis. TV, social media, our very existence, our boss, everybody requires everything done fast and yesterday. And this desire for speed is so incredibly bad for our nervous system, because basically what we're doing, we are just walking nervous systems. And so we are constantly just reacting to everything around us. And I think this is one of the things I teach aside from Park Bathe, but we also very briefly mention it on the walks, just understanding your nervous system, what it is. It's basically this big threat detector. And this environment that we live, four concrete walls for a start, is incredibly stressful for our nervous system. Straight lines are really stressful on our visual system, hard, high contrast. Whereas nature is actually, and there's plenty of research on this, two researchers called the Kaplans have done a lot on this. Nature is actually a much more soothing environment physiologically. So on absolutely every level of our body, being in nature soothes us. So, but we don't do it because there's this pressure to be productive and to be operating. And actually there's kind of a culture around being the busiest, you know. And so it's very difficult. And we do a lot of unlearning, you know, and we have to push a message that people don't really want to hear, which is slow down. So there's the cultural barriers, but then there's also this, well, if I slow down, I might meet myself. And that's scary for a lot of people. And this is where I'm going to slightly sort of segue in a little bit to meditation and actually do a bit of a hard line between most meditation practices and forest bathing, because there is a hard line between the two. And in fact, actually, at the beginning on the research project, we attracted people who would phrase it something along the lines of, I don't get on with mindfulness, I don't do meditation, I can't do it. And the reason why they really often, those people, took to forest bathing is because a meditation practice, by definition, not all of them, because there are embodied ones, but a lot of them are in your head, right? It's following some kind of instructions, and it's focus and attention and concentration. And it feels like you are really up close with your thoughts in your head. And for a lot of people, that's really difficult. Now, there are, as I say, I've studied this, so there's 300-400 different types of meditation. So there are some that are absolutely not about your thoughts and are very much about the body. But I think predominantly, if we just go with an overall view of meditation, it's more about being in your head. Now, the crossover, the sort of the middle ground, is a walking meditation. And this starts to become much more embodied. And what happens when you slow right down and do a walking meditation is you come out of your head. And one of the great things about a walking meditation, to even do it, you have to focus on your feet. It's the first thing we do. I did a session last night. We're working with refugees at the moment. The first thing I did in the room with the people is not look at the table, what the nature activities we're going to do. Feel your feet. And it's a really interesting thing just to feel your feet and just be aware of them. Where are they? Have you got more weight on your left or your right? Can you feel the ball of your foot? What's the temperature? And so the second you're doing that, where are you? You're in your body. You're in your senses. You're using your vestibular system to stand up. Of course, you're using your brain and your head because it's all connected, but you aren't in your thoughts. And this is the big difference, the leap. One of our highest scores from our research study was rumination. That dropped by 50%.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Hi, you're listening to There's a Walk for That with me, Harriet Thomas. I'm talking with today's guest, researcher, author, TEDx speaker and wellness practitioner, Vanessa Potter, and founder of ParkBathe. Before the break, Vanessa was explaining that one of the highest scores in their research study was rumination. Rumination dropped by 50% as a result of park bathing. So I wondered, what exactly is rumination?
Okay, I can give you lots of different ways of describing rumination. It's sticky thoughts. It's where you can't stop thinking about something over and over and you're churning, or you might be having spiraling thoughts. And quite often those thoughts will start up high and come down low because they'll go for a negative default. Or you might be replaying a conversation that's happened in the past, or you might be practicing one for the future, or you might be just contemplating lots of things like your shopping, your to-do list. So rumination is obsessive thinking. And it's a really important signifier, because that is the, you know, a root. It is a starting place for many mental health conditions, you know, alongside loneliness and isolation. And hello, those two things go hand in hand: rumination, overthinking, loneliness. So to have rumination as such a high score, and this isn't just over one walk, this was over multiple walks over a three-month period, 180 people. So we didn't just see this once or twice or three times, we saw it all the time. And I'd say it's still one of the highest scores. People say at the end, I have not thought. Now, that is, if you want to put it somewhere into the spiritual world, that's the closest you're going to get is a walking meditation. But it is nothing like any of the more formal contemplative practices. So there's a real hard line between the two. But they do have a synergy. Now, in terms of outcomes, there's a lot of synergy. Reduced anxiety, a sense of calm, reflection. The other crossover, of course, is visualization. Because I know you're interested in that. What is a visualization? Just think about it in terms. It's a walk in your head through a field or a beach or wherever the location is. Inevitably, we are often moving in a visualization. It's really unusual. I'm trying to think of a visualization I've ever come across that doesn't have some form of movement or some form of a walk or a stroll, whether you feel like you're a human or a person or just a moving thing, but there is movement. And it's often in a natural environment. So all we're doing with a visualization is taking it into the real world. So there's a crossover there. Mm. And I think that's why, not for all people, but for quite a lot of people, visualization can be a really nice experience, and people often feel this because the brain doesn't know where you are, right? The brain doesn't know the difference between the past, the present, and the future. And actually, if you we see with our brain, not our eyes. So you can close your eyes and still be in a forest because we can imagine it. And I've actually taught this to people who don't have visual imaginations, and they go with senses. So they go with textures and feels. And they might notice like the sensation of a breeze on their skin. So everyone's different. Some people can see like forests and trees and colour, but you can still imagine being there. And that's because we have a visual memory. And so there's this synergy that comes in here. And so it's not surprising really that forest bathing is such a beneficial practice.
Let's return to my guest here on There's a Walk for That, Vanessa Potter, to hear more about the benefits of Park Bathe and the research that backs them up.
So the Park Bathe project started with a conversation with a health researcher about compassion. And it was just after that conversation that we started talking about the power of nature. And she came at it from a very, very scientific perspective, particularly because she was a skeptic. Because you have to have a question with a research study. And ours was, can we make forest bathing, which is seen as traditional and spiritual and an Asian practice. Can we take this well-researched practice and put it into British parks for British people? And if we do that, what do we have to do to make it palpable for that market? And science was the answer. When we pitch this to the community, there's that initial kind of recoil, particularly from men. And how we got around that was to challenge them. So we challenged them with the science. So we said, when you come on these walks, we're going to give you your own individual readings. Wear a heart rate variability monitor. We'll take your stats. I've got a scientist here. She'll give you your data, your individual bespoke data at the end. Well, that was a massive pull. So we had two tickets per walk where people got strapped up and we took all their data. And that's what gave us, I mean, everyone filled in the surveys, but those individuals gave us heart rate variability data. And that was really interesting because these people came often going, oh, well, I don't believe any of this. This is all woo rubbish. I'm here for the science. And that was fine, you know. And then at the end of the walk, we'd be like, could you give us the strap back? And they'd be like, oh, I thought, oh, yes, I'm wearing it, aren't I? Oh, I hadn't. Look at this red berry. And we're like, they didn't care about the data anymore. Time and time again, we'd have to go running after them to get the straps back because they were drifting off down the path so relaxed. So science was the door, and science still is our door. We get a lot, I get social prescribers saying, I can't get my clients to come on this unless you tell me the science. Fine. We've got a whole page of science on our website for people that need that door and that persuasion. But when they leave, they don't care.
You know, I'm sure everyone listening is like, right, I want to do a park bathe right now. What do I do? Are there any top tips that you can give people to get them going?
I mean, the first thing I would definitely say is they're free. Come on a session. You know, you come on a session, you learn it.
And where can we find out about park bathe?
Everything is on the Linktree site. So you go to Linktree and then /park bathe, and then the booking link is on there. You can also search for us on Eventbrite. But in terms of doing it yourself, I think the most important thing is back to those feet. If you're going for a walk and you go to the park, don't just do, first thing, don't do the same route, do a different route, because otherwise you'll go into autopilot. Go a different route and just follow your feet to begin with for about the first 4 or 5 minutes and walk slow. One, two. That slowing down and concentrating on your feet and feeling the textures beneath the ground, that will do loads. You'll be amazed just what that does. And then just notice three colours. And if you just go to the park and did that and it takes you 7 minutes, you've lost nothing in your day, but I would guarantee just even that will be different to how you were in the park the last week or the last time you were there.
There's lots of people who will be listening who are nowhere near London. And in fact, the show goes out overseas as well. Is there a website or how can people contact you or learn more about you?
You can go to me when that has absolutely all the resources. And that's just simply VanessaPotter.com. We did a podcast originally. And on that, which again, you can link to from VanessaPotter.com, there are multiple interviews with all the forest bathing experts around the world.
Thank you, Vanessa. I'm so grateful to you for opening our eyes to park bathe and for sharing all the research that backs up its benefits. Once again, you can find out more at VanessaPotter.com.
Thank you for having me on the show.
I'm off to take a very slow walk in an urban park near me, and I hope you'll do the same. Until next week, happy walking.